fate has no mercy. Escape my fate.
Welcome back, everybody, to our fifth episode of our Tickets for Two podcast, where we aim to provide our unique insights on films and very possibly TV shows. Okay, Santi, tell us, what are we going to be reviewing today?
Today, Andrew, we're going to be reviewing and discussing The Northman, starring Alexander Skarsgård, who was also a producer on the film, and it's directed by Robert Eggers, director of The Witch and The Lighthouse. The Northman, to put it quite simply, is a movie about Amleth, a Viking prince who sets out on a quest to avenge the murder of his father. Andrew, what did you think about The Northman?
Right away, leaving the theater, I definitely felt very immersed into this incredible scenery that Robert Eggers was able to put out. This is incredible, knowing that this is only his third film. Like you mentioned, he did The Witch, he did The Lighthouse, and now we're here at The Northman. And I loved how immediately you felt the vibe of his style that he usually does in the past two films, if you've seen them. But I got a quick little funny feeling from it. I felt like this was The Witcher meets Game of Thrones. This is the kind of way that I felt it when I was watching the film. More of a LARPing kind of cosplay type style of filming. It was great. It was a great film. I loved the actors. The amount of CrossFit that was probably done to gain this physique, it makes you want to go to the gym immediately and look like them. Crazy amounts. And I don't know if many of you are video game enthusiasts, but I also love how this reminded me more of the Assassin's Creed Valhalla type of game. A lot of Viking, a lot of assassinating, a lot of stunts. I enjoyed that. And not to mention, there's parts of the film, a lot of scenes where Alexander Skarsgård's character, Amleth, he's swimming quite often, and that is an incredible breaststroke that could put Michael Phelps to shame. It was really good. But a fun fact about this film as well, this was Ethan Hawke's 22nd certified fresh film that he's had throughout his entire career, which I thought was very interesting.
Out of how many?
Oh, then now you got me there. I should have been prepared for that answer.
But Tom Hanks probably has like 500, right?
That's true, but it's still from the fact that
22 is a lot.
It's a lot. But what about you? What were your immediate thoughts leaving this film?
Yeah, I mean, look, a movie either gets me or it doesn't, and this movie totally got me. Didn't take long, 5-10 minutes in, I was pretty much hooked. This is an epic historical/fantasy Viking story, and it's completely visceral. I was glued to my screen the entire time. It was always enthralling to me. It never really stuck on one point for too long. It's a really simple story, but it's just done so well. And you mentioned Robert Eggers' style. That's what really elevates this film for me. Everything about it was done so effectively. I highly, highly recommend it if you're into historical epics. I feel like it's a genre that has slowly been dying in Hollywood. We had The Last Duel come out from Ridley Scott. That was a box office bomb, even though it received good reviews. So getting films like this that are set in that era, absolute treat. And it's done really well. It's not just junk thrown at the screen. It was really, really good.
That was a good point that you made, that this kind of era of film is sort of dying. Like you mentioned, we had The Last Duel, but we also can't forget The King that was on Netflix with Robert Pattinson and Timothée Chalamet. Also a great film, but that era, people seem to deviate away from for some reason. Almost like, we've seen enough of those. We've grown up on those types of films. But this definitely set the mark for a whole new wave of historic epics, as you mentioned.
Yeah, no, I hope so. I know I look at the box office numbers. It's only been out worldwide for a couple of weeks, but they spent $70-90 million on this. Somewhere between then, they probably spent another $100 on marketing, and it's only sitting around $41 right now. So it's probably not going to make a return on its money, but maybe come awards season, it'll win something. Maybe it does well on streaming. I really, really hope so. So that at the very least, we can get Robert Eggers some more big budget films. These are the kind of movies that we need people to go out and see. I just go see it. You know, if you like Eggers, if you like this type of movie, go see it. And Andrew, you were talking about the video games that reminded you of. For me, it was kind of like that Dark Souls-ish, because it was
very violent, dark
fantasy at times. That's the kind of vibe I got from it. I don't really have a movie off the top of my head to compare it to, because it's just different from other ones. This is so much more bloody, gory, and all that sort of thing, and it's just visually stunning. I wanted to mention real quick, if you look at the tomato score, it's kind of mixed for audiences. I think it's around 60-ish%, 66%.
Really? And okay.
I knew that going into the film. So I'm like, okay, it's Robert Eggers. Maybe it's a bit of a more indie style film and all that. But I watched it. I found it really accessible. I didn't think it was that complicated. I don't know how people can watch it and be like, oh, it's, you know, boring, or it's like this, or it's like that. It's like, this is a very straightforward story. It's a very straightforward movie. There's nothing like out there about it. I was actually not disappointed, but I was a little surprised it wasn't more out there.
Yeah, that was what I was going to bring up. What does that say about the sort of state of filmmaking right now? I feel a bunch of audience right now are just so sensitized to these live films of superheroes or like explosions or sort of a Michael Bay type of Transformers film where there's big lights everywhere, big, you know, like I mentioned again, explosions. But I feel this type of film that's more slow paced, more grounded in story, kind of sets audiences off of like what they're so used to seeing already. And I think that says a lot about where movies are heading towards, like what path.
Yeah,
which it's kind of unfortunate, honestly. It is.
Yeah, like I said, I'm just so surprised, because people are saying that, oh, it's slow and boring and all that. I'm like, not really. People are saying, oh, it was marketed as an action film, and it's not. I'm like, it kind of was to me. I don't know. I thought it was very action-filled.
Yeah, one thing I was reading was a big issue that audiences were having was that they were kind of noticing that this film almost glorified the pillaging and, you know, I don't want to say the word out here, but you know, the assaulting of women that was depicted in the film. But that's just how it was in those days. You know, that's the historical aspect that they're trying to portray. But I agree. I feel like it was a fine line between just showing what happened, but also a little bit of the glorification, which I feel a lot of audiences that I've read were turned away from.
That's interesting. I didn't read that, but it's actually funny you mentioned that, because just yesterday I was reading a review about a foreign, like an Arabic-languaged film from like, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and there was a, I think the director at some point had a back and forth with someone who protested against the film. He said, listen, I'm just expressing I'm just creating a historical product. This is how things were back then.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, that's just what it was. I'm just showing you how it was, and there's no need to whitewash, you know, these things in the past. That's kind of, if that's what the culture was, then that's how it needs to be, you know, portrayed. It was a really violent time.
Then you get people who kind of are kind of offended of like, oh, you didn't show what the truth was. And then you get other people who are talking about like, well, maybe you could have sugarcoated it a bit. So you're not going to please everybody. That's one thing you have to understand, or these filmmakers have to understand. But it still does hurt when they put their passion and their effort into a film like this, and then they end up getting a backlash of like, well, you should not have done that. Well, don't blame me. Blame history. That's how it used to be.
And it's based on the story called The Legend of Amleth, which inspired William Shakespeare's Hamlet. And Amleth is actually an anagram of Hamlet. Or I should say Hamlet's an anagram of Amleth.
Wow, okay. Right. That's a good point.
Yeah, so I didn't know that going in. So, like I said, I think Eggers did a great job. You know, this is based on, like, not a real story. It's based on a legend. But he did a tremendous job, I think, also showing the real aspects of maybe what, you know, Viking Norse culture was back then. So, Andrew, it sounds like you really liked it. So you recommend this as well.
I definitely recommend it for anybody who wants to go out there and watch something that's totally unique and different from what's out there currently. I know before we reviewed the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. We reviewed the Everything Everywhere All at Once. All these films that we are currently talking about have all unique storylines and very unique methods of filmmaking. And this one definitely sets itself apart. So watch it, enjoy it. And I would love to hear what everyone else has to say about it. I can't think of anything that could make me say, don't go. Definitely go.
Unless you're really, if you're really squeamish, probably just don't watch this film. But, you know, give it a shot. I'm still, we'll jump into spoilers in a, through a discussion in a second. But I'm still really surprised at people who criticize the film for being boring or anything like that. Like, there's certain elements that you can criticize, which is fine. Related to maybe the story being too simple or something like that. But yeah, I like I said, you know, everyone's able to have their own opinion. I just never found it boring. I was hooked the entire time.
Oh, same here. I was definitely hooked the whole time. It was definitely captivating, and I can't wait to hear how people else react to this. I feel like it's going to be a great, great thing. But with that, should we dive into spoilers now?
Let's do it.
All right, let's dive into our spoilers. Now everyone's been warned, and here we go now. Santi, what worked for you when it came to this whole film? I feel like there's a lot of things that you can go on about, you and I both, but let me know what your main points were.
Yeah, I have a lot of points on what worked for me. I think one I really wanted to touch on early was that overall it was paced really well. You know, this movie was split up into chapters, and I think that really helped because this movie is a bit on the longer side at 137 minutes. But it was never, as I've mentioned before, not boring. It wasn't jarring. It didn't feel like it was jumping from plot point to plot point. It felt very smooth the entire time. And I think that really helps for a film like this that does have those slower moments when it's dealing with the characters and things like that. And you mentioned earlier the visuals. It's just a beautiful film to look at. The visuals and the action scenes, which are really easy to follow. The fantasy elements all being integrated really well. And last point before I get to you, I love that this movie didn't explain everything, you know, like the background about how he became a berserker warrior and all that. Like, I don't need to know, see him getting picked up as an orphan and trained. Like, I don't need to see that. You know, this is who he is, this is what he's doing. You know, what's real, what's not, I don't really know in terms of the fantasy stuff, but the film doesn't waste its time with that, and I think it's for the betterment of the movie. What worked for you?
That's great points. I love immediately when you jump into the film, it starts you off with those Nordic letters. So you're already in the timeline, which is really, really fun. I can't get over of how amazing the script was. Like, you can tell so much thought was put into the dialogue. I've heard so many different ways that people talk in many films that we've seen, from the Nordic language to possibly ancient Greek to possibly, you know, ancient Latin. Like, but the way that this film kept going and the way that you can tell they were talking, nothing felt exaggerated. It felt like they really put in their time and effort to think to themselves, how would they actually speak in this time? And not only that, but the dialogue was great, but the music just felt so authentic and eerie and creepy. Mm-hmm. I was reading that Robert Eggers, the director, he mentioned that the music was the most difficult part to put together in this film because he wanted to make it feel so masculine, but also at the same time so relaxed. And he talked about how they used Viking Age instruments to put together the music. So we already know that this film is going above and beyond than anything else that we've ever seen before. But like we mentioned before, it was a visually gorgeous. The landscapes were beautiful, especially when they reached Iceland. The set design was amazing, and I think one funny thing that I love to bring up is there was a scene where Almith, he goes into a cave and he finds like the witch. This is when they're in Iceland.
Yeah.
And that witch is Bill Skarsgård, his dad.
Oh, is it?
And he remains to be this incredible, unrecognizable actor. He's such a... like a chameleon. He just easily blends into every character that he portrays, like he was in Dune. I forget the character that he was in Dune, but he was the one that is covered in black.
The bad guy, Vladimir Harkonnen.
There we go. Yeah, and the way he just easily blends into all these characters is so fascinating to see. So with all this together, it just worked so well for me. I think this movie was probably the best that, in my opinion, that we've reviewed thus far.
You think so?
I think so. All the films that we've talked about up until now have been amazing comedies, amazing. We'll say, you know, Sonic, considering Sonic, you know, a kid movie, but also pretty we got Batman being, you know, a common character. Everything Everywhere All at Once was fantastic, but I think when you just look at this film on its own, you can if you read into it, it was mostly practical effects, and that's what to me stands out as probably the most interesting film that we've talked about thus far.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that it was. I don't remember any scenes like looking like, oh, it's bad special effects or just looking completely off. You mentioned the effort made and the dialogue and all that. I think you definitely see that there was a lot of care in crafting this film. Do I know if all the costumes or anything like that were completely accurate? I don't know, but it all looked really authentic. It all looked like there was tremendous attention to the detail. And as a film viewer, you know, you really appreciate that. You know, you might not completely notice it, but your brain notices it. You know, you're the back of your mind kind of, you know, is noticing these things. That like, hey, that doesn't stand out as looking cheesy or out of place or anything like that. You mentioned the realistic lines, the dialogue they used. There was one line. I don't know if you remember any of them. It was he was going to assassinate his uncle when he was in the Iceland farm. And then his uncle went to rape Olga, who was played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And she was on her period. So, you know, she slapped him. The uncle left. And then Amleth. Was,
Amleth.
mixing up my guys. this is hard. It's so hard to remember all the characters' names from this. But Amleth, he had this line. It was hilarious. But it was good. It was like, he was like, be glad that, what did he say? That like the only blood you saw tonight wasn't like, was the blood of like a woman's flow or something like that. It was just like, he said it so seriously, but it was like, yeah, maybe that's how they talked back then.
They try to say period in the most longest way possible. It's like when you try to reach the word count on an essay, like just
exactly.
How many ways can we describe this?
yeah, that's pretty much what he said. It was like a 20 word sentence. But no, I thought that that line was great. You mentioned the soundtrack as well. The throat singing was so good. You know,
yeah,
it was just, this is like the ultimate testosterone film. You know, it's the kind of film that just makes you want to go to the gym right afterwards. Kind of reminded me of like the Batman, like not every scene in there, but there's some scenes in the Batman where it's like really, really hype. And I think it did that really well. You know, it's just kind of badass. It's the ultimate revenge film. You know,
and a great coming to age film as well. Definitely him growing and going through his journey.
Yeah, I definitely see that. Part of his coming of age film, I've been going back and forth in the couple of days since I've seen the film, is regarding his character development. We'll talk about some things that didn't work for us later, but I slightly disagree on him growing as a character. Like, I kind of saw it, but I kind of didn't see it. But I do agree it's a coming of age film. You know, this is him following his revenge. But I might have some interesting disagreements there that we can talk about later.
Hey, let's jump into that then. Hey, let's jump in real quickly. Let's say, like, what didn't work for us, and now that we talked about what we loved about
let's
it.
Do
so,
it.
Hey, I mean, you're already on the ball rolling, so go ahead. Let us know.
Yeah.
What didn't you like?
Yeah, well, you know, when we talk about Amleth as a character, you know, early in this scene, they have the berserker action scene, which is amazing. But then, you know, they light the house on fire. And then it just kind of shows him, was he regretful? Was he not regretful? I couldn't really tell. He did go at night, you know, and he ran into that witch person. But it didn't seem like Amleth was capable of, like, that much critical thinking in a way. It seemed like he was dead set on revenge, which is fine. That's totally fine. I would have just liked to have heard his, you know, inner dialogue a little bit more. Because one of the themes that this film touches on is kind of like the ignorance potentially of children when it comes to their parents. So in this case, you know, his parents, he seemed like they were like, he probably thought they were like a happy couple or whatever like that. And then obviously there's the big twist that not only did his mother, played by Nicole Kidman, who was fantastic, you know, she not only, you know, loved his uncle more than his father, but, you know, she ordered his death, as Amleth's death as well. And I thought that aspect was really interesting. But I feel like we didn't get a chance to see him reflect on it as much as I would have liked. He just immediately went and told Olga that, you know, oh, you know, she's crazy. Which, you know, it may be true, but it's like the one thing I kept thinking about was, as a child, he sees his mom, like, you know, being carried away screaming, but then his mom says, no, I was laughing. Is his mom lying because she's, you know, batshit crazy? Maybe, but at the same time, maybe his perspective was slightly skewed. Maybe we're seeing everything through the eyes of him as a child, and it wasn't really how things were.
Wow, look at that. That's actually a great point. So, you know, I never heard that before, but, you know, you may have a point there. I like that.
And then something else regarding the theme.
Go for it.
Seems like you love this film. I could keep going with a couple of things that didn't work for me. I don't have that many things.
No, I mean, after you, I'll keep it going too, but I definitely want to hear exactly everything. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone else wants to hear too you didn't like. There's going to be a huge fan base of people who are going to love this film. So for them to hear what you got to say that against it,
I love this film. my critiques or dislikes aren't actually, I think for this movie, they're not actually like things that negatively bring the film down for me. It's just more so things I want to point out that maybe if they were explored more, would have elevated the film just a little bit more. So kind of based on Amleth as a character, you know, what's the theme in this movie? The theme is revenge. Is it just supposed to be a cool story based on the legend of revenge? You know, because in the end, he, you know, avenged his father. He got revenge, killed his uncle. Bloodline is secured. He's got his babies with Anya Taylor-Joy. He's off to Valhalla, which is an amazing way to, you know, to die in combat. So it's a success for him. But his uncle had a line earlier in the film about, you know, revenge and, you know, revenge going in these cycles. And I just kind of figured, like, so what's the theme? You know, I'm trying to figure out, what's this movie trying to tell me as the viewer? Is it revenge good? Is it just trying to tell me a cool story? Is it trying to tell me that people won't be able to rest until they've had the revenge? Because I think, you know, it was a little jarring when he just jumped off the boat when his wifey said she's pregnant.
He didn't want to pay that child support. He didn't want anything to do with that kid no more.
The kids, he saw two of them. He freaked out. Oh, yeah, but he just jumped off. That part was like the only part that was a little jarring. Because he's like, oh, my uncle's going to hunt our kids. But I was a little confused because I thought the uncle didn't even have a kingdom anymore because he got kicked out by King Harold. So was he just saying that as an excuse so he can go get his revenge? I think that part was a little, you know, a little jarring to me. I would have loved to have seen a different, I know it's based on a legend, but if there were the movie just, if he just kind of like went off and never got his revenge, you know, that would have been kind of interesting. And it just kind of like, it just gnawed at him for the rest of his life, you know?
I
guess it's based on a legend, so they got to follow that.
Yeah, I think personally, I believe what he was saying when he finally noticed that he saw the vision of his two kids. That I think no matter, even though the uncle would have had no kingdom at all whatsoever, that he would have probably gone solo dolo on a mission to take care of him and take care of his wife, take out his kids. I think he would have definitely wanted, like you mentioned, it's a theme of revenge. It would have kept going back and forth until someone put a stop to it, which definitely would have been on Omelette's part, which thank God he did. But yeah, let me throw out my couple points here. So for a couple reasons that I did not like the film, or parts of it that I didn't like, more of a nitpicky type of style, but yeah. I know yours are more really in depth, which is great, but mine are more a way where you pick out from watching the film the first time. What I didn't like is that this film felt a lot like a high school play to me. The accents didn't really match the actors to me most of the time.
Yeah.
There was specifically a time when I was watching Ethan Hawke talk to his wife, Queen Gudrun. The accents are going to be so hard to talk about. Nicole Kidman character, but when Ethan Hawke is talking to Nicole Kidman's character, he starts going back to his normal accent. Like he can't keep up that regular type of the Nordic accent. He can't keep it up. And that also happened with Nicole Kidman when she was like screaming and yelling at Amleth in the in Iceland, when he came to confront her, mm-hmm. she was reverting back to her British accent. So it threw me off a lot. And I'm sure it's going to happen a lot in these films. They can't really keep it up all the time.
Yeah.
But that's why it felt like it was just a huge high school play where they're throwing on a robe and they're pretending to be in this time. So to me, that's what it felt like right away. And it kind of got me out of the zone. But I'm pretty sure that doesn't really happen to anyone else that watches this movie. Another thing that I didn't really like was how dark this film was at times. I don't mean dark as in, like, the style. I mean dark as in it was low light. It was always in a cave. There was very little fire that could light up the scene. So I caught myself a lot wondering, like, what is going on? What am I seeing? What am I looking at? And to me, that felt very...
Maybe the theater sucked, bro.
Maybe it could have been, but I feel like the theater that I go to is pretty high quality. But yeah. I don't know. I felt like it was on purpose, 100%. We know that. Why would it throw it in if it wasn't? Everything in a film is done on purpose, but it was still so dark. Maybe it was more of a way of the director telling us, like, this is his dark point in his life where we're going to be seeing everything in his mind. And then that's why towards the end or towards the middle, everything is all outside, brighter, more recognizable, and yet he starts to get clarity, perhaps. But another thing that bothered me was when Ethan Hawke's character got assassinated, I remember the uncle said, "Find me the boy's head," and the kid did a very quiet little gasp behind the rock, and everyone turned their head when they were like yards apart. Like, there's no way they would have heard him gasp behind the rock.
I thought they just kind of went at him because they knew he was somewhere there. I thought it was just kind of dumb that they didn't just get him the first time.
Because
he could have just ran away. But maybe they knew he was already back there. But I didn't even realize he made a gasp.
Yeah, that bothered me a lot. I was like, there's no way you heard that. And one last thing that really bothered me, which I'm sure...
You're the nitpick king, Andrew. We gotta keep an eye on you.
This film only, because it was very easy to pick out these sort of things. But I know there was historical context. I'm pretty sure anyone who hears me say this right now is going to think I'm lying through my teeth. But if you look it up, this is true. Back in the very, very early days of man, especially during this time of Vikings, their vision was incredibly good. There was, like, their eyesight was so good at night. They could see far distances. Hmm. That is historically how these people used to be, because they had nothing, you know, like we do now, TV screens, all this stuff burning our vision slowly and slowly. But there was two scenes that really bothered me. It was the first pillage scene where we see Amleth's character just walking, and someone throws a spear, and without even looking, he gets out of the way. Like, he has some sort of spidey sense, and he just dodges it. And that happens again in that game tournament that they're doing, when the big guy throws a ball at him.
Icelandic Quidditch?
The Icelandic Quidditch, the old games that they used to play. That has a very long name that I forgot how you pronounce it.
It's literally just Quidditch. The game was just like Quidditch.
It was just like it, if you know Harry Potter, which I don't, but... If you know, it's just like that. But when they throw the rock at him again, he like dodges it in like a second. It's like, there's no way that you're making us believe that. But at the same time, again, they probably had very, very sharp instincts. So it's
CrossFit workouts, man.
They also work out their eyeballs. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's all that CrossFit. He's got insane reflexes.
One thing I want to bring up, getting into, is I want to get into what I learned about what got into making this film. So I'll go on a quick little rant for all of you guys who are not prepared for it, but I love reading into what happens behind the scenes, especially when these films like this one gets produced. You know, we talked about what got into Batman, we talked about what went into Everything Everywhere, and this one does not escape us. I read a lot that Robert Eggers, he worked with one of the top historians and researchers and archaeologists related to anything Viking to get this movie to be 100% accurate. And
was that Sion, the writer? Because there's a co-writer on it. His name is
Sigurjón
Birgir Sigurdsson, who's an Icelandic poet, novelist, and lyricist.
I know he worked on it, but he also had a whole team of researchers and historians. So not just that, but he had everyone working on it. And it's been, I think, not officially announced, but it's announced that this is the most accurate Viking film ever made, thanks to the hard work that he put into it. And I love also that we're talking about that first Viking raid, the first time that the Berserker Raiders is what they called it. And that was all done in one take, which is fantastic to think about.
That was you can tell from the camera. I mean, I feel like the one takes are getting so popular to see them all the time now in like every movie.
Yeah, and that's one thing about Robert Eggers is he has this rule to himself. He calls it a no multiple camera coverage rule. Is the way he likes to film is he always wants one camera at a time, if anything, because he hates the idea of having them everywhere. So the fact that he did this in one take, and in the interview that he did, he brought up 1917, the amazing film that won or was nominated for Best Picture that lost to Parasite. Mm-hmm. But he loves that. He got the inspiration from that as well to make it in this film. It costs a lot of money to make. It takes a lot of effort to have it completed. But the fact that it was done in one take like that and looked so gorgeous was incredible. And the good one facts. Thing that... Good fact, yeah. I mean, I'll keep going if y'all let
keep
me.
Keep going.
Yeah, but the one thing Eggers is so ashamed of is that the one thing he did not get accurate were their hairstyles. Apparently, no one wore their hair the way they did in the film, and that's what he beats himself over the head for.
So Alexander Skarsgård, his real life version of Amleth doesn't have a bowl cut when he becomes a slave.
Right, that's the thing that they talked about. To Vanity Fair, they mentioned that they did not have bowl cuts, and that's the one thing that he thought was hilarious. But and not to mention, I mean, if you remember that one scene where they're in that ship, and they're rowing it. This is before get captured
on the river.
On the river, yeah. So that ship, that rowboat that they're on, was so historically accurately built that they used the same wood to build it that they used back in those days as well, wow. According to Alex and Eggers.
Well, so they built that for the movie. That makes sense.
They built it for the movie, and it just... I don't know. It's incredible how amazing this film was made.
It really is.
And the amulet, the necklace that Almuth wears, that was made by an Arabic silver coin just the way it was made back in that era. It's fantastic to see everything that went into this film to be so... historically accurate. I loved it. Every bit of it.
Yeah, no, those are all amazing facts. Thanks, Andrew. Regarding that rowboat scene, I guess it was also historically accurate when there was a couple like fish farmers and they just shot him with an arrow. That's just how like shit was back then, I'm guessing. You know? Yeah. It's just brutal. It's like, you know, these pillagers come and everyone's just kind of mind their own business. He's like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, shoot an arrow into these guys.
What do you think about how films are going nowadays? You talked about this earlier in the podcast here today, is how this film is broken up into chapters, and I feel like that's happening a lot. And I think, you know, we have to respect the original person who made this happen, Quentin Tarantino, but like we, you know, in Everything Everywhere All at Once, that was broken up into chapters.
Yeah.
Now this film is broken up into chapters. Do you think that is going to be the future? Because before, these films have been broken up to acts, you know, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. But now we have all these different parts put into one. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, usually the acts are just kind of in the background. It's part of, like, the script screenwriting process. But the whole chapters thing, you know, it could just be a product of this era of directors being younger. Maybe they're seeing it in different movies and getting influence. But it could also be kind of connected to television, because I feel like television is so popular these days. Television is a monster. It's more popular than movies nowadays, and so much of TV is about characters and splitting up in different episodes, that in order to better kind of craft their narrative in film, because they're so much more limited on time, they only have a couple hours to do it, maybe that's why they split it up into chapters, so that way they're discussing what's going on. Like, okay, so this is going to be, you know, the first section. Then this is going to be the second section. This is going to be the third, or fourth, fifth, however many they want to have. I don't know how much this film had. I think it was more than three. But I think it's just trying to, like, kind of tell a larger story in a shorter time frame, so that the movie doesn't feel like it's occurring over a period of 2 hours, but instead a period of over 2 years or however long it needs to be.
Do you think that helps the audience feel more at ease? Like, whenever it cuts to black, changes chapters, people can, like, breathe.
I think so.
Okay, next part's coming
in. It works. You know, it's not something I'm going to complain about in that sense. I think it's going to depend on a film-by-film basis. I think in this film it worked because it did show that, hey, you know, not all of this is happening overnight. Maybe a couple of weeks are going by, or a couple of days, or however many, you know, long. And it also helps, like you said, kind of reset the audience. It really helped with the pacing in this film, in my opinion.
Good point.
You like it the same way I do?
I do. Like when I was watching this film, I didn't really get it in the previous movie that we talked about, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I didn't quite get it. I think we mentioned there that one part was like way too long.
Like 20 seconds long. It was so pointless.
Yeah. I think this is a great way to actually depict filmmaking. It does give the director a chance to talk about everything they want to talk about, and also gives us a time to disconnect for a second. Like they were so immersed in this story, and then it cuts to black. We see the next chapter, and we're like, oh, okay, now we know that we can move on. We don't need to think about anything too hard. And I think it feels good. I think it's a great way that we're heading. And I love it, personally. Do you love it? Do you think this is the way it should be?
Like I mentioned, I think it's just going to be case by case. It's just a matter of the film doing it right or wrong. Everything Everywhere All at Once, I kind of get it, because it's, you know, everything at first, then it's everywhere, it's super long, and then all at once. I guess that's what they were going for. In this film, it worked because of showing that, you know, how much time had gone by, helped with the pacing. It works, but I don't want to see it in every movie. Sometimes you kind of like that long, continuous feel of a film. But it's really just going to depend on what movie there is. But I think it's mostly just used to kind of reset and show that passage of time.
Couple things I want to bring up, which I think you will agree with me. Number one, Nicole Kidman's right away going to be nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Right away. We know that. We know that. She's amazing. My second point, I think the costume design is going to be Oscar worthy. I feel like the way that they talked about they made this film, that the clothes that they were wearing was also authentically created, definitely going to be nominated as well for the best costume design. That's how I feel.
I think a lot of that Oscar stuff just comes down to how hard they kind of push for the film to be nominated, but it definitely deserves a nomination. I know it's early in 2022, but it was not easy to get. I mean, let's be honest. The last scene was easy to get the costumes. Just two naked men fighting on a mountain. There's not a whole lot of design going on there. But the rest of the movie is was really well designed.
Let's talk about that final fight scene, because to me that reminded me of the Mustafar fight scene in Star Wars Episode 3 with Anakin and Obi-Wan. That's how I felt. Well, what did you get out of that final fight scene?
It reminded me of that. It also kind of reminded me of the fight scene in The Lion King, which is obviously inspired by Hamlet as well, with Scar and Simba, with the, you know, the flames and everything going around everywhere. I gotta say about that fight scene, and this is kind of what I liked about the movie, that it doesn't explain everything, because he's like, the uncle comes in before at the back of the hut, his wife is dead, his second son is dead, and he's like, I'll see you at hell. And then it's like, okay, see you at the volcano, like 6 p.m. Like, when are we talking, bro? Like, this is a big mountain. It's a big mountain. Where are you going to see me? It's just like,
oh my God.
It doesn't need to be explained. Like, you know where they're going. But it's like, that place is huge. How does he even, he's going to be searching for him. Like, where are you, bro? I've been like naked for like 3 hours. I can't find you. But no, that scene was, it was incredible. It's just like they're just the part where they're like, he's about to die, and he's just like screaming at his uncle, and the uncle screams back, and they're both screaming at each other. Was and then, you know, the decapitation was it was just really badass.
It definitely, to me, felt, I think I told you about this earlier, this was the way I interpreted this film was his journey from being a slave to a savior. Mm-hmm. Like I got that kind of symbolism out of it, seeing that he freed all the women that were living in that Icelandic village, and at the end of it all, he saved his wife and kids from potentially being murdered by his uncle. So I thought it was a beautiful journey from being the, you know, very bottom to going to Valhalla, which, my God, if we talk about those scenes of where he's riding the Pegasus, the Valkyrie, going up to Valhalla. Man, that was gorgeous. I love the way they depicted that.
Yeah, I really liked how they implemented the fantasy scenes in this film. I think it could have gone really wrong, but it really worked. Mm-hmm. It had me thinking, like, what part of this is real, what part of this isn't real? You know, what part of this is in his head? But it didn't matter. They didn't need to give us an explanation. You just kind of had to accept it as a viewer. And it was definitely gorgeous. And CGI was fantastic.
What would you pick out of your favorite? Would you rather pick to Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, or this Norse mythology? Like, what was your favorite? What do you think?
I think as a kid, I liked Greek mythology the most. It's the most I read about it. I played God of War when I was younger, and I think there's just so much with Greek mythology. I've read the book Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman, which is a fantastic book if you're into short story style of thing. Egyptian mythology, I don't know as much about. I mean, anything historical, I think, for me. What about you?
I grew up on, as a kid, reading nothing but Norse mythology. Yeah, like Odin, mm-hmm. and Valhalla and all these sort of like...
How about that Odin scene?
These mythical lands. The Odin scene? Oh my god, am I
forgetting
that?
There was like a scene. Man, I forgot where it was, but... Well, there was a couple things. One, when he's rescued by the ravens. I mean, that was Odin.
True. But yeah, there was a scene before that cool.
where there's like this figure of Odin just appeared. I can't remember which one it was.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Like he was standing like in front of him or behind him, but I remember that. I do know what you're talking about. I think it's pretty cool the way that they did show that for a second. But
yeah, I have a couple points I want to make before we wrap up.
Go for it.
Random notes, things that I liked. I think that I liked this movie. Like, would say things earlier and they wouldn't just like dismiss it, would come back to it. So Nicole Kidman, his mother, says like, you know, don't come in as I'm like, you know, getting dressed when he's a kid. I was like, oh, what the hell's wrong with this lady? Oh, it's because she had a slave tattoo. She didn't want him to see it.
Oh, okay. That's
why she was putting her clothes on. She's like, don't ever enter my chambers without like asking first. It's because, you know, later in the film she reveals, hey, I wasn't some highborn princess, I was a slave. You know, you're a product of rape. You know, your father like raped me on like a pillage or Viking like pillaging thing. And that's why she didn't want him to see that. The other thing was Hymir, played by Willem Dafoe, who was brilliant. I don't know if we talked about him, but that character was just fantastic.
Brilliant as always, Willem Dafoe.
He made a joke with a jester because Nicole Kidman's like, oh, like you can drink from my glass to his aimless uncle. And then Willem Dafoe basically made a joke about her loyalty to the king. He kind of just called her like a whore essentially in front of everyone, and then the uncle got really, really pissed, and the king was like, you know, like he's a jester, you know, just let him, you know, don't worry about it. And it, really early on, you know, I didn't realize it then, but you can just kind of tell, hey, there was a thing going on with the uncle and his mother, and then, you know, it really was a good foreshadowing. I don't know, did you catch that one?
I didn't catch it at the beginning, but it did make sense when Nicole Kidman was like telling off Amleth, like, your uncle showed me love. Yeah. He showed me was like, yeah, that's when I started understanding, like, oh shit, okay,
yeah,
this is who we are.
And yeah, if you go back to that scene with Willem Dafoe, he pretty much, you know, spilled the beans there. And then the other thing I really liked was early on they gave the line, I think it was like the kindness for the kin or revenge for enemies. You got to choose. I'm like, what's that going to be about? Is that going to be his mom and, you know, who, Olga?
Oh,
his kid. He's going to have kids and, you know, things like that. So the film did a really good job of coming back to some of those things that had dropped earlier. Like I said, to me, it was a very clean film. There's not a lot that I would have changed to it.
One thing before we wrap up, the last point I want to make is I thought it was very, very funny the way Allmith would always stand with his like head hunched or
crouching, slouching.
Slouching. And his arms to the side, almost like, mom, I threw up kind of stance. Like, you know, you walk into your parents' bedroom telling them you had a nightmare. Like, it was always funny to hear that.
It was an example of great physical acting. I've seen this movie compared to The Revenant in terms, I think it was produced by the, or distributed by the same company, not in terms of exactly what the movie's about, but it is about revenge. The colors are a lot like The Revenant, and in that movie, Leonardo DiCaprio won an Oscar for his physical acting. I don't think Scarlett's going to get nominated for anything, but his physical acting in this movie, like you said, that, you know, the slouch and the menacing look was really well done as well.
True, I agree. The way his facial expressions always were, like, those screamed volume, but... But okay, hey, with all that put together, and thank you to everyone listening to us ramble about the most probably boring parts of the film with all these fun facts. But let's wrap this up and let's hear what we got to say. All right, Santi, out of 5 tickets, what would you give this
Yeah,
film?
I went back and forth a bit on this between 4.5 and 4. I know it doesn't really matter, but it's the difference between a 9 and 8. In the end, I'm going to give it a 4.5 just because I had such a great time. you know, and it is a well-made film. This isn't just like I had a good time, you know, watching some boring action movie or some typical action movie. No, this is unique. It's a simple story. It's a simple story done really, really well. All the pieces come together. It's really violent. It's very, you know, historical based. It's just fun. It was just, I had a great time. You know, I was totally hooked. And I, like I said, 4.5 out of 5, I thought it was great. What did you think?
Right away, I know that 2023 is going to be probably one of the toughest award shows that we're going to be seeing in a long, long time. But I think, I remember I was telling you, I feel very ashamed to say this out loud, but I will. Because I feel like
we all know what you did.
This definitely goes a... everyone knows. I was bouncing back and forth between a 3.5 to a 4. And the reason why is because at first value, when I saw this film, all I could think about is how I feel the accents did not match the actors. It was very dark at times to hear. There was a lot of parts of the film to where I was like, where are we even at? What's even happening? For a majority of the film, I didn't even remember half the people's even names. All I could think about is their real names. Like, oh, there's Anya Taylor-Joy. Oh, there's Nicole Kidman. Yeah, there's Alexander. Yeah. Like, that's all I could think about. I didn't even know where their names were. So all that stuff, I was like, oh, okay, you know, this film is good and all, but I'm not going to give it the highest of praise. But I feel like this should go for anyone else watching films like these. After you see this film or any other film that is so different than what you typically see, do your research afterwards and you gain such a huge appreciation of what went into it and also a huge appreciation for the mind of the director. And with all that put together, I definitely agree. I give this a 4.5 tickets out of 5. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous film. A full point up, but just seeing how accurately well made this film was, the amount of effort put into it, the care and the craftsmanship, nothing beats this film. I know this film is going to be nominated for Best Picture. It might not win, but just seeing how gorgeous it is, I think it will. Seeing how gorgeous this film is and how again, accurate historically it can be. I mean, that's what brought 1917 to be historically accurate as well, or I mean nominated because of how historically accurate it was, because of the one take shots that it did that broke ground on filmmaking. So if you look at the history in the past, this film does the same thing that other nominated films have won, and I definitely think it will earn its spot up there. It might not win because we have a whole year left of films, but it definitely will be nominated, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it'll win. I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is a front runner because the Oscars are, you know, fans really loved it, critics really loved it, and Oscars are trying to appeal more to fans. It's not the most Oscar-y film, but I think that's the front runner for now. I'd be happy to see Northman nominated just to have it get more views from streaming and you know, other methods like that.
And I hope it will, too.
Yeah. Random note. Was your theater really loud?
Man, there was like 5 people in my theater. There was nobody watching this.
No. Not the people. The audio.
The audio seemed pretty... Yeah, the audio early seemed on. Pretty fine to me.
Oh, okay. Mine seemed really loud. It was... Yeah, it was like deafening on some of the early scenes.
But okay, thank you everyone else for listening to us ramble about the most Nordic, Icelandic... Very testosterone film. Yeah, there we go. Testosterone film movie possible. But if you made it up until now, I'd like to tell all of you that we have a very special episode coming up soon. Santi, do you want to tell them?
Yeah, we're going to be reviewing and going back with Paddington 2.
Yeah, we're going to Paddington 2 and then following up with Toy Story 3. That's exactly what we're going to.
That is what we're doing. Blast from the past. No, we are going to be reviewing... Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I know everyone else is probably, and the grandmas are all reviewing that movie, but let me tell you, Andrew is not just a self-proclaimed, but I proclaim, Asante proclaimed, Marvel expert. Going to be a treat to discuss this film with him.
I love all things Marvel, so please forgive us if this next episode is going to be 70% of me rambling on, but I'm excited for it.
It's
going to
be like 4 hours long.
Everyone, please be aware of spoilers. Do not ruin the movie for anyone else out there. This is going to be a huge event, and we please appreciate if you all respect one another.
Absolutely. We don't want to... Stop spoiling stuff for people, guys.
It's like not fun.
It's one of the... the deadly sins, in my opinion. It's just an awful thing to do.
You're not going to be a cool guy doing it either. So
yeah.
Let's have some fun all together. How about that? But okay, now that you all know what's coming up, we're excited to see you again on the next one. But for now, thank you again for listening. And with that, I think we will sign out.
That's all. Thanks, everyone.